When you have such a deep fear of something that you're going through, if you can find a passion that you love more than that fear, that passion can help you get through that fear.
Wow. Welcome to Menopause Reimagined. I'm your host, Andrea Donsky, a nutritionist for more than 18 years, menopause educator, and menopause researcher. I'm also the co-founder of WeAreMorphous.com, a company that helps you take control of your health and symptoms. Today, I'm speaking with Limor Ziskind. She's a 46-year-old mother of three beautiful girls who has defied the odds by triumphing over an aggressive form of breast cancer. Her journey has not only touched her community, but also inspired the hearts and minds of thousands of people with her unique brand of aggressive positivity. Despite enduring intense treatments, Limor's resilience shone through as she performed at galas, recording a viral album, and sold out her first solo concert, all while going through cancer treatments. Her book, Aggressive Positivity, serves as a beacon of inspiration, offering hope to those facing challenging circumstances. Now, here's Limor. Welcome to the show, Limor.
Thank you so much for having me.
I am excited because today I'm actually in person with our guest, with Limor. So for those of you who are listening on the podcast, if you want to head over to YouTube, you can watch it. You can watch our video there, or you can listen on the podcast. So I'm excited because I normally do them on Zoom, our interviews, but Limor lives near me. And she wanted us to do it in person, which I'm so happy about because being in person is just, it's a different energy. So I'm excited that we're doing this. And Limor has an incredible story that she is going to share with all of you. So Limor, why don't you start with your story, with your journey? You know, I know that you've been through a lot, and I think it would be really inspirational for everyone who is listening that you could share how you got through it and kind of, you know, take us through what happened.
So when I was 39 years old, I felt a lump that was not going away with my monthly cycle. Mm-hmm. And I asked my doctor if we could check it out. And she sent me for an ultrasound. And the ultrasound technician was like, I don't like what I see. And I ended up getting sent to Sunnybrook. And I thought that they were going to tell me that I'm totally healthy. I literally wore a red dress for the day that they were going to tell me the news. And unfortunately, they diagnosed me with an aggressive breast cancer that had spread to my lymph nodes. And my kids were 7, 5, and 3 at the time.
Wow.
And I was just shy of my 40th birthday. And they basically laid out a year's worth of the most intense treatments available and all of them. And thank God we live in a country where we have such incredible treatment, because there are places in the world, like in the US, for example, where if you don't have insurance, you can't afford radiation,
right?
Or you can't afford chemo and radiation. So you have to choose between the two, which is a devastating thought to me, because if I didn't have all the treatments available, I don't know if I'd be sitting here talking to you. So,
wow. So you got your diagnosis, and what went through your head at that moment?
Shit is basically for, I would say 3 days straight, I couldn't stop crying. But then I decided that I didn't want to go through this in that way, and that I had to find a different way. So my next appointment with my doctor, my first question to her was, will it affect my voice? I know it's not a very orthodox question to ask your oncologist, but she said, no, I don't think it shouldn't affect your vocal cords. So I turned to my husband and I said to him, okay, I'm going to record an album. He's like, what? He thought I was crazy. And I said, yeah, that's what I want to do. Because in my mind, I was thinking, oh my God, if I'm going to die, I may as well die trying to fulfill my dream, which, you know, with three young kids, it's not something that you could approach your partner and say, hey, I want to take up a lot of my time right now and do this thing for myself.
Right.
And I really credit that process with being a big part of why I'm here now.
Now, were you a singer? Tell us a little bit about what, you know, why recording an album came to mind.
So my whole, I started singing when I was 16, and I moved to LA after doing a business degree, and my parents made me do something that's like solid that I could use in the future before pursuing my passion. And
right.
So once I finished an undergrad in business, I moved to LA for 4 years to pursue a music career, and I did all kinds of wonderful, incredible things, got to interact with amazing people. And then I moved back home to do an MBA and get a corporate job. And when I was finished with that phase of my life, I always wanted to create an album of music that I wrote myself, but I never had enough. I don't know. It like just didn't happen for me. Maybe I didn't have enough to say at that time. And when I was going through my treatments, I had a lot to say. And it was to, you know, I was writing music to uplift myself and all those around me. Because when you go through cancer, it's not just you that goes through it. It's every single person in your life is going through that with you. And so I would write a song 1 week, and then I'd record it the next and write and record and write and record.
Wow.
And then I'd perform the songs in different galas. And I anyone that wanted me to perform at a gala, I would say yes. And that kept me going, because the thing is that when you have a such a deep fear of something that you're going through, if you can find a passion that you love more than that fear, that passion can help you get through that fear.
Wow. That is so powerful. So you said you had a lot to say. Give us some insight into some of the songs that you wrote.
So the first one I wrote is called Alive. And I wrote it 2 days after my first chemo treatment.
Okay.
And the lyrics are, everyone's going through something,
right?
Or going through something hard. Everybody's got to fight. Everybody's got to try. No winners and no losers, and there's no room for wrong or right. And what I was trying to, and the chorus is, I'm alive, I'm alive, I'm alive. All this time, I've been waiting for a sign, and here I am, I'm alive. And I wanted to express that there's no one right way of going through an aggressive challenge or any challenge in life. And that we all have to do our best within those situations, and we all are. And you might not see it, but you know, even someone that might take things and get depressed and not want to get out of bed, that's valid too. There's not, you know, everyone was born with certain tools. Everyone was taught certain tools from their parents, and then life circumstances gave you another set of tools. And so there's no one cookie cutter way. And I did want to share the way that I went through my challenges, because I feel like it'll just give everyone another tool in the toolbox to manage life. And if I can help uplift someone even a little bit, it's something.
So you have an incredible gift. It's pretty wild, actually. So tell everybody what your singing gift is, that you could sing in how many languages, and you hear a song. Like, it's pretty interesting. You definitely have to be on like the Guinness World Book of Records or something.
No, there's people that can sing like every single. So I have a gift where I can hear someone sing in a different language, and then I can mimic that sound without an accent. And so whenever I meet someone from a different culture, I force them to teach me a song in that language.
And you don't speak the language.
I don't, and I never forget it. And it can be like 20 years later and I'll still remember that. And I'll run into someone from that culture and I'll sing them the song and they go crazy. So I can do that in 50 languages. I would love to be
50 languages.
By the time I'm old, I would love to be able to do that with every officially recognized language in the world, and maybe even unofficially. I mean, if you go with different dialects and things, there's hundreds and hundreds of languages, but it's a pretty cool skill, because I can recognize by a person's accent where their roots are and usually connect with them with the song, and then it's interesting.
So where could people, a couple questions. So number one, where can we find your record? Can we download your record? Can we purchase it?
Like,
where can
so we find Alive it? Is on iTunes and Spotify already.
Okay.
I do have a new album coming out called Senora Pina, and it's going to be in Spanish.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. So I wrote, my grandmother Pina was this incredible woman who spoke 11 languages. She was taught by monks in Jerusalem, where she grew up. And this necklace is from her. I wore it throughout my whole treatment process and healing journey. And
I love it. I see. I've seen you wear it. I'll like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I didn't realize that was from her.
So it has like the archangels of Judaism that surround me with love. And anyway, it's strength. It. So I drew a lot of strength from her because her healing journey, she had MS for 30 years and they gave her 5 years to live and she lived 30.
Wow.
And I drew a lot of strength from her. And she used to sing and she used to listen to these Mexican boleros on repeat her whole life. And my father continued that tradition and continued listening to these songs over and over and over. And I thought, I'm going to do my own version. So I chose my 6 favorite songs and recorded them as an album. And that's what I'm releasing.
That is amazing. So we'll be able to find it on iTunes.
Yes.
Amazing.
Yes. In the next few months.
Yeah. In the next few months. Okay. Yeah. So I want to go back for a minute. Did you want to continue?
No, that's okay.
I wanted to go back to, you know, you're writing your song. So you found out that you had breast cancer mm-hmm. and you decided to make an album, to yes. record an album. What happened after that?
So throughout the process, I basically wrote and recorded a song every week and made a few videos out of them. My last song I wrote on the back of the booklet that gave me all the side effects of radiation. I instead of reading the side effects, I just...
You just wrote the song
on top of it. Yeah, I feel like sometimes when you read things that you're going to have, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy and you get scared and all that. And I just... asked my doctor, what should I worry about? And then beyond that, I was like, let's see how I do. Hmm. And a lot of people wanted to understand how I went through this process the way that I did. And so I started writing a book about how I did it. And I gave it a name and I called it Aggressive Positivity.
There's her book. I got it on Amazon. That's where I bought it. So it's amazing. So tell us more. Yes.
So I wanted people to understand from a philosophical perspective, what steps did I take to get to that mental state and how did I stay in that mental state? And I realized that there could be kind of like a formula of what I did. And I wanted to give that formula to people that were going through something similar or any kind of challenge in life. Because my oncologist told me that of all of her patients in a similar age group and a similar diagnosis, she said, Limor, you're leaps and bounds ahead of everyone beyond what I can explain medically. And so the only way I can explain it is with your attitude and with the way that you went through it. So I thought, whoa, if I'm leaps and bounds ahead of other people, what does that tell you? Hmm. Where are all those other people? Hmm. It's a scary thought. And so suddenly I realized that maybe this thing that I had stumbled upon could be the difference between life and death for some people.
Wow.
Because if I'm leaps and bounds, that's just a very sobering thought.
Did you feel like you were leaps and bounds? Like, how did you feel?
The truth is I didn't interact with other people that were in my similar position because I was scared. I was really scared. I kind of put myself in this positive space. And I was very conscious of not being around energy that might bring me down. And I didn't know how other people were handling their situation. So I didn't go to any of the support groups at all. I just wanted to be around happiness and I wanted to be around music and I wanted to be around people that were telling me funny stories and I wanted to be around energy that was very, very high. And that's just the way that I chose to go through it. And again, that's not to say that that's the right way. Some people get energy from other people in sharing what you're going through. I didn't do it that way.
Like you said, there's no right way or wrong way.
Yeah, there's no right way. There's no wrong way. Because I noticed that, for example, I'd meet someone in the waiting room and if they could have the same diagnosis as me. And if their energy was low and down for whatever circumstances they're going through, it could very easily bring me down because I was so weak at that point. Mm-hmm. And I was using every ounce of my energy to uplift myself. So I was really conscious of kind of staying in this bubble of happiness. All I wanted to talk about was my music, my kids, and happy things. And I would focus on the positive aspect. So right when I was diagnosed, I told my oncologist, please, if you could, only tell me the good things. I don't want to know percentages, recovery, like the chances of survival. I wanted to know none of those statistics. And I told her, just focus on the good. And I asked her, what stage am I? And she said, you know what, Limor, that's a silly system. She goes, in my mind, there's only two stages, treatable and not treatable. And you, my dear, are treatable.
Amazing.
So I said, great, I'll focus on that. And of course, it made my husband crazy because he's the kind of person that needs to know every single detail of every single little thing. So eventually he got to a point where he couldn't come with me to my treatments because he needs to know every little thing.
Right.
And so that's okay. My dad came with me.
Oh, did your dad came with you?
Yeah, my dad came with me. My mom came with me. Friends came with me.
That's, you know, you hear often about mindset and, well, we know that mindset plays a huge role on in so many things, but in this case, do you feel like your mindset is what kind of got you through everything?
100%. 100%. It allowed me to also, so what happens with the mindset is if you're in a positive mindset, then you have the good chemicals going, hormones going through your body. You're more well-rested and your body believes that you need it. Whereas when you're in a depressed state of mind, stress hormones go through your body and they know medically now that those stress hormones negatively affect your outcome. And in fact, Sunnybrook had these meditation videos that they found improved the chemo's effectiveness by 30%. That's huge.
Wow.
And that's just a meditation video. Imagine exercising also decreases the effect of the chemo and all this. So I realized very quickly that I need to be in a state of grace, in a state of bliss. There's many different things that I did along the way. If you want, I can give you like a 60 seconds of aggressive positivity for your listeners.
Please, absolutely.
So you don't have to read the book to apply, you know, one or two of the tips and tricks. So the idea with aggressive positivity is first, you need to be in a state where you accept your challenge. You accept the situation that you have found yourself in. You are not in denial. And once you, and however long that phase takes you to process what you're going through, it could be a week, it could be a month, it could be a year, whatever it is, you need to be in a state where like, okay, I accept I have X, Y, Z. The next phase is you have to flip that state of mind. Now, flipping your mind means taking the negative situation, I'm sick, and flipping it into I'm healing. And it may sound difficult, but the more aggressive your challenge and the more deep your challenge, the easier the flipped state of mind is, just like hot and cold, love and hate, sickness and health. So I told myself, I'm not sick. I'm healing. I'm healing. I'm healing. I'm healing. I'm healing. But the problem with flipping your mind and thinking of that flipped state of mind is it's very easy to go down a rabbit hole. One, like you can be in this high state of mind and then in 2 seconds be back down. How do you keep your state of mind in a high functioning, high vibrating, whatever you want to call it, in a high state of mind? How do you keep that? And what you have to do is you have to continuously and in a aggressive fashion, hit it with actions of love. What does that mean? You have to find an activity that you love so much that it gives you an aggressive boost of energy. Why? Mm-hmm. Because thinking positively is a physically draining activity. Think about those days when you haven't gotten a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
How do you feel that next day mentally? Not only physically are you tired, but mentally you find yourself unable to think positively about the most minute little things.
Yeah.
And that's why it's important to have physical activities. Now, it could be a walk. It can be working out. It can be a good laughing session with your best friend. It could be watching a movie. It could be, for me, it was singing and spending time with my dear loved ones. Those things, when I leave that singing session, I'd have this like in my stomach, you feel it. And it's the only criteria that you need for an action of love is How much energy are you getting from that activity? And you have to schedule it in such a way that you're continuously looking forward to or engaging in an activity that gives you physical energy that will keep your thoughts high. And then you can stay in that state of high thinking. Mm-hmm. And I think that in today's day and age of social media and all the distractions of technology, some people have lost their sense of self and what they love and what their passion is. A lot of people used to say to me, but I can't be like you. I don't have a passion like singing. It's not about having a passion like singing.
It's finding something that you love so much.
Something that you love. Well, I don't know. Oh, you should know. Why are we here? Why are we on this earth? Some people will say to suffer. I will say it's to love and accept love and to give love and receive love. It's to love for me. Yeah. I mean, and what is love? Love is light. Love is giving. What is light? It's waves. We're all here to figure out how we can bring more light to this world. And
I love that. I do. I love that. It's like, I'm getting goosebumps listening, but it's so true. Love is light. And it's a matter of really finding that thing that just you love so much more than the thing that you're fearing. And I think that that's a quotable, that's like a thing that you should put down, like, as in a quote from by you, because it's very powerful.
You know, biologically, now they say that when you enter a room, fragments of your DNA and your energy and vibration can stay up to a month in that space.
That's amazing.
This is I'm a bit obsessed with quantum physics, but it's like, it's a crazy thing to think that when you walk in a room, and if you light up a room, you actually are lighting up that room.
Yeah.
And if more of us are in this positive state, doing the things that we love and sharing our light with others, then imagine the world that we can live in. And take the effort, take the time to try different things, figure out what you love and makes you happy, because a happier you will be a more productive you.
You know, for many of us, because we speak to women in perimenopause and menopause, for many of us, as we go into this phase of life, we're discovering, you know, who we are, maybe, you know, we're coming back to who we were before. And I love this a lot because it allows us to kind of really kind of dig into what is it that we love? What is it that we're so passionate about, and finding something that makes us so happy. And I can, you know, even when you were talking about it, you light up, like you were like, and you could see that passion shines through. So I can understand why you loved it so much and how it helped you get through such a difficult time.
Well, you know, I am in menopause. They medically put me in menopause at 40. And you know, during that time, there were so many changes going through my body hormonally, mentally, and I did get to reinvent myself at the age of 40. Mm-hmm. I could choose what career I wanted to go towards and where I wanted to be. And I made some choices that made me happy. And it's a wonderful thing. And I feel like at every age and every day we reinvent ourselves. The Limor that I am today is not the same Limor a year ago, just through hard work of examining myself and who I am and what I am. And, you know, raising three daughters, the only way I can raise them is by being a good example. And because you can preach till you're blue in the face and they won't listen, but they subconsciously absorb your behaviors and your attitudes. And it's really interesting to see. And so if I lose my temper, then they'll feel like they can lose their temper, and we're human and it's okay. And,
yep.
You know, I think all along the way, we can only hope to be the best that we can be within ourselves, and then they can take the cue from that and try and do the best for themselves.
Yeah. Tell me what the difference is. So your book, you called it aggressive positivity.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference between aggressive positivity and toxic positivity? So we know that we hear a lot of like toxic positivity. So, and this is not toxic positivity. So what is the difference, so people can wrap their head around it? Did you make this term up?
Yes.
Okay.
I did. So funny enough, when I was being diagnosed, I experienced that toxic positivity because everyone around, well-meaning, was saying things like, oh, don't worry, be positive, you're going to be okay. And that was so hard for me to hear because I was like, what does that mean? Be positive and you'll be okay. When I'm faced with like months of chemo and radiation and surgery and having to tell a 3-year-old that mommy's going to be sick. how are you going to get through that? And I didn't understand what that meant at all.
Yeah.
And I think that nobody understands what that means, really. Be positive. So for me, aggressive positivity is about facing your challenges. It's not about glossing over the difficult challenges. It's actually facing them and doing something within that challenge and giving you tools to get through it. So here's, you know, 100 examples of mind flips, because usually when you're tired and you're sad and you're facing such a challenge, you can't even think.
Yeah.
So I give a million examples of different mind flips. And here is a formula of how you can get through it. Here's just a strategy, another way to go through it. And I think that it's important to not be so hard on yourself.
Self-forgiveness.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
You know,
like, it's okay if you didn't make it out that day and you didn't exercise and you were just in bed, or it's okay to, you need to process pain. Mm-hmm. You need to process fear. You need to give it a space. So I'm not, the aggressive side of the aggressive positivity is that that need to do something physical, but also the intensity of the thoughts that you're having have to be larger than the fear. Because like, to climb a mountain, you need to be stronger than the mountain. You've got to, and it's many, many, many steps, and there are many different detours, but the intensity within which you have to approach it has to be more intense than your challenge. And you need a lot of physical energy to do that. That's a crazy thought.
Can you take us through an example? Let's say, because what I like what you're saying is that, you know, you need to feel it. You need to, you know, it's kind of like not, it's not brushing it aside. It's, mm-hmm. you know, it's feeling it. Mm-hmm. So take us through an example of, let's say, on a day that you were a little bit more down and mm-hmm. you were, you know, what are some thoughts that would go through your head and how did you flip that script?
Mm-hmm. So, you know what? I had a tremendous amount of fear before my first chemo treatment. Like, I didn't know how I was going to feel. I'm used to all these movies of how people go through chemo. Chemo has changed a lot since then. It's now targeted to your DNA and your blood type, and your, it's quite incredible, but there was still such anxiety. So the night before, I watched Avatar, and then I watched Impractical Jokers, which is my favorite hilarious improv show with goofy guys that from high school that do funny things. So I spent a lot of time being happy that night before to try and psych myself out of it. And then as they were putting the needle in my veins, actually I had a port, so it wasn't, I just kept telling myself, this is medicine. Mm-hmm. This is healing me. I'm healing, I'm healing, I'm healing, I'm healing. And I listened to great music and I had my dad with me and we were making jokes and we tried to, I asked them if we could do karaoke chemo.
Okay. What is that?
I just had this vision of like, while I'm doing chemo, because I was there for 4 hours,
right?
To like sing, because it takes me to another world. But that's, I wasn't amazing. Allowed, because not everybody goes through chemo like that.
Right.
You know, some people are very weak, can't listen to noise. Some people get headaches. I asked if I could get a private room so I could wheel in a karaoke machine, and they said no. So I was the last person there. I usually was, because I had like it's called dose dense chemo, whatever. It's like a lot of chemo. So the last hour, it was just me and the nurses and my dad. So we would whip out the karaoke and we were singing with the nurses, and it took my mind off of what's happening.
Wow.
Yeah.
Karaoke chemo.
Karaoke chemo. Yeah. Ellen, if you're listening, I have a concept, you know?
So how long ago was this? Put it into its mind.
So this is really crazy. I can't believe it. 6 years ago.
6 years ago.
Yeah. So May 31st, it will be 6 years clean.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is incredible.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And do you still speak to your oncologist? Like, oh, yeah. What does she say to you?
Well,
is it considered 5 years still, that?
5 years is the magic number that I'm cured. Considered cured. So I used to see her every 3 months, well, every, during treatment, like every week, yeah. Twice a week. Then it goes down to every 3 months and then every 6 months. So now I'm at every 6 months, and eventually they'll get to every year, okay. Which is wonderful. And Yeah.
What does she say to you?
In what?
In terms of the fact that, you know, your mindset played such a big role, your aggressive positivity played such a big role in your healing.
You know, actually, she believes so strongly in the way that I handle myself that she wrote the foreword to my book.
And she sounds like an amazing doctor.
She's incredible. She went away along with all of my whims and all of my stuff. And I gave her a large amount of books to give to her patients. And
wow.
Yeah, she's something special. She helped me a lot.
She sounds like it.
Yeah.
And is there anything that you would love to share with our audience that we didn't really cover today that you feel would help them? Like you were saying that your book, Aggressive Positivity, helps really anyone with any challenge mm-hmm. that they're facing. Is there anything that you feel like you'd like to touch upon that we didn't talk about yet?
So one thing I wanted to touch upon that helped me get through was releasing anger. And, you know, there have been many things in my life that happened that were legitimately horrible, like an ex-boyfriend that cheated on me on a stage, or I've been fired pregnant. Like, you know, there's a little bits of anger that kind of sat in my stomach for way too long. And I wrote a list of everyone that hurt me and that I held some kind of anger towards. And I said their name out loud and I said, Andrea, I forgive you for hurting my feelings so badly so many years ago. And I thank you for teaching me X, Y, and Z about having grit. I thank you for teaching me to have a passion, or I thank you for teaching me what I don't want to be. Or I thank you for changing my direction.
Yes.
And I went through that list and I was shocked that there were 40 names on that list.
Wow.
40 years old, I had 40 names.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm sure you can think of every year of your life, there's something drastic that happened that you're like, oh my God. And I let go of all of that, all of it. And it was so uplifting and it left me feeling literally high.
Wow. I love that. One of my girlfriends, her dad had cancer, he had kidney cancer. And one of the things that he was telling her is he did a lot of that work around releasing anger.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't speaking to his brother and they patched things up. He ended up, he's a survivor as well. And he was saying how the anger part plays such a big role.
Yeah.
Such a big role. So basically you made a list and you, it's not even like you contacted the person. You
just for myself to, I mind flipped the memory of what happened. So rather than saying, oh, this person made me miserable at work. No, they didn't. You were meant to not be in that job. They came here to maybe make it difficult for you to stay in that position because your direction had to go somewhere else and you wouldn't have changed it on your own.
Something better was
something
waiting
different
for you.
Around something the corner. Different. Yeah. And another thing I wanted to touch upon is the importance of having a community around you.
Support system.
So I worked very hard. I knew that I needed the support of an army to get through this. And I recruited people around me. And I'm an extrovert, very obviously by nature. There's not one way to get through this. I literally recruited my community to come and I asked people, please pray for me.
Oh, that's great.
And I told everyone around me that was close to me of my, I only want to talk about good things. So if you want details about the diagnosis, about my next chemo schedule, whatever, you can ask my husband or you can ask my mom, but don't ask me because it brings me down. And that's what the way that I chose to go through it. And there's no one right way. But for me, that was really helpful because when I'd see you, you would talk about your life rather than what's the name of the drug you're on. I didn't even know because I didn't want to be able to Google.
Right.
But again, not one right way to go through it. I had a type of cancer that was standard. It was, they know how to treat it. And so I didn't have to do a crazy amount of research to know what the right treatment path was. Some people have rare types that you do have to be your own advocate.
Right.
But I was, the way that I advocated for myself was that there was a bright future ahead of me and that I was going to heal and that I needed to go through it in that way.
So were there ever times that went through your mind that you may not make it? That, so I'm guessing the answer would be no.
You know, it's a crazy question. I never allowed myself to go there.
I love that.
But on the 1 year anniversary of when I was diagnosed, and the 1 year anniversary of my surgery, and the 1 year anniversary of my first chemo, I had major psychological setbacks.
Okay.
And that's when I needed psychological support. So during the process, I was like, ugh! I was in survival mode and I was in a really high functioning state of mind. It was a year later where it kind of sank in and I was like, and the scariest one was my first mammogram post treatment.
Okay.
Because I was totally convinced that I was healthy. And then a year later, I'm going for my next one. And I thought I was healthy. And then they told me I was sick. So going for that next one was terrifying. And the psychologist who specializes in oncology, she said to me, what would you do? What's your greatest fear? And I said, obviously, if it came back. And she's like, what would you do if you did, if it did? And I just sat there. You know, I never let my mind even go there, not for a second. She goes, well, let's go there for a minute. And I sat there for 5 minutes in silence, which feels like an hour. And she said, what would you do? And I said to her, oh my God, I would go crazy. She's like, what do you mean? And I'm like, well, I would do what I did this time, but like on steroids. She goes, what do you mean? I'm like, I don't know. I'd like make a movie. I would jump out of planes. I would like, I don't know. I would literally go crazy. I would do anything and everything that I dreamed of doing, but like to the maximum. And she goes, and how do you feel now about, God forbid, that situation right. should arrive? And I was like, oh, well, it's kind of like, I feel a little bit better because I know that I have a plan. Isn't that interesting?
My God, goosebumps.
So I was like, I know what I would do. Wow. I kind of know what I would do. Like, yeah. So sometimes having a plan for the worst, even if the worst doesn't happen, gives you peace of mind. It's kind of like the story of was it Jacob when he went to see Esau? He stole the birthright of his brother, and they separated, and they didn't see each other for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. And then they decided to have a reunion. So Abraham did three things. He prepared for war. He prepared for the best interaction. He brought a gift. And what ended up happening was they had a lovely interaction, but he was also armed with his swords and whatever he needed to battle with his brother. And we never know in life what's going to happen. So I think it's really important in all situations to kind of have a plan. You know, so we
plan for sure
for the worst. And that was one of the most difficult, I'd say, conversations I had to have with my husband is, if I go, I need you to be strong. And I need you to raise our daughters. And so whatever you need to do to be strong right now, because I need all my energy to heal myself, I need you to find your community and your strength so that we can get through this. And that was really hard because I actually couldn't be there for my husband during that process. His sister was number one uplifter of my husband and his parents and
so his he had his own support team.
Yeah. And he had friends that were here on my couch every day.
Wow. I was going to ask you, what would you say to partners and family of people who are going through it or challenges?
Don't be afraid to ask for help. I think the most difficult part is to say, hey, I'm drowning here. And, you know, when you're physically ill, it's so easy to come and help someone that's with crutches. But when you're feeling down, it's so hard to say, hey, I'm drowning here. I need that help. And I'm here to tell you that when you ask help of people, 99.99% of the time, people will rise to the occasion.
Yeah.
And the friendships are not friendships unless it's a two-way street. And if you're going through a down and you need an up, ask for it. Be like, hey, I need you right now. I need you to come and have coffee with me once a week for half an hour. I actually need that. And I think that you, if you can have the mind frame of recruiting soldiers, just see it as like soldiers in your army of positivity. It does so much for your state of mind. They say in Judaism that when you visit an ill person, you take 1/60th of their illness away from them. And so if you have several visitors throughout the day, you can imagine that you're left with a sixth, you know, 5/6 of your illness because you had 10 visitors. Imagine what that does. And energetically, if you're boosting someone, not just taking away some of their illness, but giving them a boost of energy. And another thing I think that was really important was I also made sure that I told people around me, if I ask you, am I going to make it? Even if you don't believe it, I need you to say, yes, of course you will. You're going to make it.
Yeah.
Because any other answer is not an option.
Not an option.
Yeah.
I have one last question for you. What would you say? So we talked about your, you know, partners and family and support systems. I love the fact that you talked about asking for what you need, which is a big part too, right? Yes. A lot of us don't want to bother other people, but I love that you're like, this is what I need. So I want to make that happen. What would you say to people like friends or family who have a loved one that has been diagnosed with something? Because many times we may not have the words or we don't know what to say.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to those who are listening to be able to support somebody who needs that support at that moment?
It's a very good question. I think that saying to someone, you're not alone. I'm with you in thought and in prayer and in whatever other capacity you will allow, I'm here for you. Because that was my greatest fear, is that I'm going to go to an appointment by myself and suffer by myself.
Okay.
And I think for a lot of people, you know, you don't know how things are going to go, but if you have someone next to you, it's that much easier. It's like when you think about when, I don't know, at least when I was raising my kids and they were toddlers, the thought of being with all of them alone sometimes would cause a visceral, fearful reaction in my body because you didn't know how many tears you'd have to go through and tantrums. But all it took is one friend sitting next to me with her toddlers that were freaking out too, but at least we could laugh about it.
Yeah.
So I think that knowing that you're not going to be alone and taking the cue from that person and asking them, how can I help? Some people will tell me, just let me be. I need to process for a few weeks. Mm-hmm. Other people will say, come. There's small things that can help as well. I had a friend show up at my door the day before my first chemo with a little care package. She Googled what would be the typical things you might need during a chemo session. So a granola bar, a notepad, a lip balm, a hand cream, and she dropped it off and left. It was like a 5-minute interaction. Like she didn't put too much on me to like have too much emotional conversation. It was more like, here, I'm thinking about you. And I love you and I leave you. And it was very special. And I think that those kind of things is very helpful. Just knowing that people are thinking about you. I'm thinking about you. That's it. Not to say it will be this or it will be that. I remember that before I had to have like a whole battery of tests before they put a PICC line. I had to actually have needles and all that. And I was very fearful. Oh my God, I'm going to have so much pain today. I'm going to be poked a million times. And then I realized that that's a story that we tell in our heads. It's going to be bad. It's going to be like this. It's going to be like that. You don't actually know how it's going to be. And when I actually reached the waiting room, I ran into a man who they tried to put an IV in his arm 6 times and he was moaning in pain. And I said to him, how would you feel if I sang you your favorite song? So sure, I'd love that. And I said, okay, what's your favorite? He's like, I like the oldies. I said, okay. So I started to sing to him, somewhere over the rainbow, bluebirds fly. Oh, and as I was singing it, the nurse looks at him. She goes, you're done, my friend. And he looked at her and he was like, what do you mean? And the nurse was like, the minute she started singing, you relaxed. And I was able to get that IV in your arm.
God.
So the nurse said to me, can you just stay here for a few hours?
Oh, God.
Yeah. So sometimes I wonder if there's a place for patients to kind of, I don't know, volunteer to sing to patients to ease their minds, or even have an aggressively positive approach to treatment. Like if you could check a box and be like, I'm only going to hear the positive and must know details about X, Y, and Z. I wonder if there's a way to go through medical procedures in an aggressively positive way that puts patients' mental state of mind as the number one priority.
Yeah.
And that maybe they could be spared certain details knowingly. I don't know.
Karaoke medical procedures. And just before we go, I'm going to show you, for those of you watching on YouTube, you could see I wore my happy shirt today on purpose because I'm newly more so happy, positive, and her aggressive positivity. So I thought it was a very fitting shirt to wear
so
for
cute.
Today. So
she's
thank
so
you for
cute.
Doing this.
Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high, there's a land that I heard of once in a lullaby. Somewhere over the rainbow, skies are blue, and the dreams that you dare to dream really do come true. Someday I'll wish upon a star and wake up where the stars are far behind me, where troubles melt like lemon drops, way above the chimney tops. That's where you find me, somewhere over the rainbow. Bluebirds fly, birds fly over the rainbow. Why then, oh, why can't I?
Wow. Wow, that was amazingly more. It's so good. Your voice is really beautiful. Like you really, just listening to you, it changes our vibration. Like it just, you've got an unbelievable gift. And I could see exactly why it was so important for you to find that passion. And that is your passion. So thank you again for doing this.
Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to be here.
If you enjoyed today's interview, please share it, because the more you share shows you care. And as always, we appreciate you listening and watching, and we'll see you at the next interview.